theme for the afternoon talk is the liberation of the voice. When we look inside within ourselves, there are a variety of movements which take place, and one way of describing or referring to these movements is there's the quite often the meeting of perception and feeling. There's quite often memory. There may well be some energy, and that forms together. And from that, there may emerge out of that some thought, some idea there, which is also part of the movement from within. And out of all of that activity that takes place with our inner life, it moves up through the body. And in its movement up through the body, it passes through the throat and it comes out in the voice. Similar movement also takes place with the written. So there is a movement inside. It's also moving up through the body. And it's directed out through the arm there, through the end of the fingers, or fingers in both hands sometimes, whether we type or we write. And something is expressed from within that goes to the outer. It's obviously and clearly extraordinary common occurrence for us. And quite often, what comes out of the being and manifests through the voice or through the movement out through the hands could be telling us more about ourselves than what we are writing or speaking about. And it takes some mindfulness and clarity with ourselves to recognize how the being is in this kind of movement. During my years, to take a small example here, as a monk, Buddhist monk, in Thailand, in the Vipassana monastery, we engaged in a great deal of practice of mindfulness of this movement. And the way that we learned or we were taught that there is this world, as I said, of perceptions and feelings. And quite often, with fairly strong feelings, we tend to feel them physically, deeper down, perhaps in the center of the chest, or even deeper. And we'll also, sometimes with our thought world, as we say, it seems more in the head, it seems more in the brain, and this dynamic takes place. What took place in the monastery with the meditations was to be really mindful of this movement that's going on through the body to gain outer expression. And one aspect to see, whether with the voice or with the hands, what was the outcome of the movement? And with regard to the hands, it was really to notice and to see whether with the hands there was wanting, demanding, expecting, reaching out and grabbing. So there's a movement inside, it comes up through the body, it goes out through the hands, and it lands on something. And the hands can be used for that in all manner of ways. And quite a number of the problematic habits and addictions of the mind, which kind of terrorize people's lives, is this movement coming out through the hands. And that, of course, obviously, from the hand to the mouth and much more. There's also the problematic aspect in its movement, both in the speech and in the movement of the hand, which can then, in that movement, can show negativity and blame and anger. And therefore, there is a pressure inside, and rather than the wanting, it is the aversion the reaction against, but it's still the movement. And then the movement comes out in the voice, and in the movement of the voice, usually when that's manifesting itself, it will show itself that the speed of the voice will get faster. That's the pressure. Quite often, the voice will get higher, gets higher, shouting or speaking more loudly. And the third aspect is that the pressure inside is not allowing nor giving space to the other to speak. So that in the pressure, there is the view that what I have to say is more important than what you have to say. You are interrupting me, and I haven't finished, etc. And this is pressure. Similarly, it can move out through the arm, out through the hand and the fingers. That can show itself in the contractions. It can show itself in the contraction of the clenched fist. It can show itself in the contraction around a weapon and holding it hard. It can show itself as a lot of threatening agitation. And the other, which we looked at as well, in this exploration of this movement, and incidentally we explored this day in and day out. It wasn't just for an afternoon. And in the exploration of the movement, it also is in confusion. Confusion is a kind of generalized word here, which would include fear, worry, anxiety, not being able to come to a resolution, feeling a lot of different choices, etc., under the general word confusion. So there is movement going on. That movement is coming up through the being, through the body. It's coming out in the voice. Shall I to the other? Shall I do this? Shall I do that? I'm not really quite sure about this. It's coming out in doubt, in fear, in worry, and the voice is communicating it to the other, as long as they can tolerate having to listen to it all and there. But equally as well, when there is some pressure, either with the voice or without it, it may well, if it is strong, come out through the body, and it will come out through the hands as one expression. That may show itself as a lot of movement in the hands, one is scratching, one's picking one's fingernails, one scratching one's head, and all kind of itchy uncomfortableness is going on, indicating that in the deep of the being there is some agitation going on, and it's reflecting itself in unsettledness, restless movement, some confusion in the mind. And the body also looks confused, agitated, moving backwards and forwards, can't settle, can't be still. These three kinds of movements, but there is the antidote. It's not that our life is just about those kind of movements. So we also recognize, and I mentioned this from the monastery, for our practice here and in the daily life circumstance, the antidote. And sometimes the movement is not taking for the self. It's not reaching out, I must have, I want. And we can find expressions in which the movement has the movement, and the movement moves out, in this case through the hands there, it's the gift. It's the acts of generosity. It's the willingness to share. It's the love to create something for the welfare and the benefit of the other. And we want to be able to distinguish in life this movement in its healthy expression from the anger, whether of the voice or of the movement of the hand or hands there, to make that shift, and it's a very conscious shift in which the antidote would be kindness. It is friendship. And therefore, if through the being the voice is expressing itself, which is an aspect of the liberation of the voice, what the deep with the calm is will be pretty well the precise opposite to the other. In other words, if your voice is shouting, it will go, it'd be quieter. If the voice is speaking very, very quickly and aggressively, it will not be quick and it will not be aggressive. If the voice which one is sharing is engaged in active listening, it won't feel the need to keep interrupting the other. So our practice is sometimes to shift this movement from the being to find ways to be skillful to free up the voice so that we can find ways to communicate. And therefore it's a liberation of the voice. With the last one as well, when there is fear, worry, anxiety, agitation, as we know, it really, in subtle and gross ways, can manifest through the body. It's uncomfortable for us ourselves, of course, but also in the agitation, it's often quite difficult to listen to a person who she or he can't make eye contact with us, she or he is so anxious or worried or agitated. And therefore, it's a practice for us to see in our communications whether we can keep reasonably calm in the being as we speak. You know, one of the teachers said of this years ago, and sometimes, you know, it does happen for us. Somebody says something in the right moment to us, and we kind of take notice. Oh, that's, you know, a kind of thank you. And the view was expressed to me, the teacher, he was a friend of mine, he was ordained 26, 28 years, got fully ordained when he was 18, which is sweet. And he said to me, "Christopher, your talks, supportive, helpful and interesting, but," he said, "I'm fed up with looking at your hands while you're talking." Because, "Oh yes, and yes, and yes, and yes." And some, "Oh right, it's distracting." There, I can't say they're always down here, but anyway. Maybe I should sit on them, etc. So sometimes in the mindfulness of, in which there is the exploration of the voice with us, that communication is the freeing up of the voice. And similarly, when there is more calm and sitting posture with the hands in the lap or on the end of the knees, does communicate a calmness. And it is easier for another to listen to us. When our voice is more calm, it's easier to listen to. When we're choosing our words mindfully and carefully there, when we're really willing to listen to the other. And after all, the single purpose in speaking is that the person listens to us. And if one's not really interested, we'll at least be honest about it and say, "Look, I'm really pissed off, you're such a shitty person, you're really a mess in my life and I don't want you to listen to me at all, I just want to get this out." The person may say, "Oh, thank you so much for your clarity there, etc. I'm very happy that you don't need me to listen to you. Goodbye, just carry on talking." So at least we're sharing what we're seeing there. The periods of the freedom of the voice also, and this has been touched upon in other ways over our days here, is the freedom of the voice is also the willingness to find the voice. And this is equally important. So yes, we are looking at the greed which the voice or the hands express, the wanting more than we need. We are looking at the blame and the attacks and the anger and the consequences, sometimes to ourselves or others, of course. We are looking at the fears and anxieties and confusions and the inability to make decisions and all those voices and the way the body is influenced. We are also equally, as mentioned to you then, interested in finding ways with our body to be creative, to find ways in our life to be kind and generous, to find ways to speak calmly and with clearness. And when a person then says, with regard to our mindfulness practice here, whoa, never mind sitting on the cushion, what about the communications? Life is a relationship, and we know that one of the most challenging aspects of our day-to-day life is the way that we relate to others. And though we give much care and attention in our silences here, the real metal and the depth of our practice may well start tomorrow afternoon, when you put the key in the front door and your lover has been waiting for you for a week or 11 days there, or your kids are at home, or you walk in and you're alone, or you pick up, as Mikhail said, the cell phone there. Cell phones are, I like the word cell for phone, sell them. And I should say that to myself. But look, if you don't find them, it's because we put them on eBay and sold them. And thank you for your dana, as well as for your cars. They're all on eBay, and Tobin would be very grateful. Anyway, so sometimes we go into the fresh situation. The voice is important. One of the immense problems with this freeing up of the voice, this active listening, which is such a key thing with these teachings there, is how easily and how quickly that which we do not want to hear, which is not nice to hear, and that could be towards ourselves. That could be towards our family, could be towards our colleagues, it could be our community, it could be towards the different groups in the Jewish community, it could be towards your neighbours, people in Palestine and the refugees and much, much more. How easily we hear things and we feel uncomfortable about what is being said. It sounds prejudice. It sounds hostile, angry and blaming. It sounds racist. It sounds a discrimination against. It sounds like a put down of the other behind their back, and they don't have the voice. And then we listen to that. There isn't active engagement, and what the response is passive. And we forget that the passive response to that which is ugly to listen to, which is disrespectful to any human being, we forget that if we just listen and say not a word, that passivity supports that voice. And those voices, sadly, are getting more and more power, influence in our society, because good people, caring people, have become afraid to speak. And there is therefore no liberation of the voice. It's contracted. One would never say, any of us would ever say, that is easy. We can never say it is easy when people in front of us are expressing things which we find distasteful and unsatisfactory. But in the face of that. It may be we go quiet. It may be we don't want to disturb the pleasure of next Monday when you're all having your New Year celebration and then somebody at the food table comes out with some ugly racist remark about somebody and you think, oh, I won't say anything, it's New Year's Day. Why not? Why not? It doesn't have to be angry, it doesn't have to be negative, it doesn't have to be a blind reaction to, but you and I know some members of our family, sometimes, some members of our friends, some of the people we contact with, some of the people that we hear, that it's disturbing to hear. And to me, that is more important to find the calm, clear voice. And it might just be a question. It might just be a question. A friend of mine, a Palestinian friend of mine, said she was on the bus in Jerusalem and there were teenagers on the bus. And the teenagers were angry with the Arabs. And they were saying to each other, we should kill the whole lot of them. Not one single person on the bus, not one single person said a word. That's tragic. It's tragic that the voices are said. These are by teenagers coming home from school. But it's equally tragic that nobody said anything. And it's going to take, and so sometimes we are quiet there. But could it be in the freedom of the voice, the active listening is the same thing. We actually find some time for some reflection and we say, okay, I said nothing. I was afraid, I was tired or whatever the rationalizations are. But next time I'm going to have some preparation for the unexpected. If it's either directed personally or directed outwardly to others. And what can I ask? What can I say? Can I look the person quietly, eye in the eye, eyeball to eyeball, really see, and ask the person, would they like to speak more about this? What more do they have to say about this? And try to find out in the communication with that person who's saying something objectionable, which is ugly or prejudice or unfair in some way, is there any area which there is some exception? And quite often there is. So the generalization, and then say, oh yes, I met this Palestinian, he seemed to be a really nice guy, I didn't think of him as a terrorist or whatever. I met this person, this gay man there, he didn't seem to be a problem, and I had a nice connection with him there, or whatever the prejudice of all the prejudices that go on there. And sometimes we just ask, would you like to say a little bit more about him or her? Would you like to talk a little bit more about those people in the bisexual community and hear what they have to say. What was your experience when you met one or two of them? And sometimes another voice. And when that other voice is then coming out and when one is hearing it, at some point to say, make it really clear, thank you for saying that. I really appreciate your openness. I really appreciate that you really do have a connection there, and perhaps there are lots of other exceptions to this generalization there, and to really thank the person. Goodbye. Leave them with it. Leave them with the fact that they have just completely contradicted themselves. And you know, sometimes we might continue. And perhaps you know some people in that community where there's prejudice against whoever they are. And you might say to that person, actually, I know some people in this community and that community. You know, it might be the Orthodox community, it might be the secular community, might be the gender communities and much, much more. Would you like to talk some more? Would you like to meet? And see if something else, just to contribute, one is actively listening and engaging. Because without diversity and without respect for it, we are dead. Spiritually dead for a start. And the insularity of the group, or the insularity of the identity, that those beloved people in society, they do feel excluded because the majority, without even realizing it, may be expressing racism. And that racism sometimes is in the voice, but sometimes it's most indirect, which is it's difficult, in not asking the voice of the other. It's not saying anything. And our passivity indirectly supports it. It's not the intention, but it supports it. And that's the danger of, if we lose the liberation of the voice, we lose the liberation of the freedom. Sometimes in life, opportunity comes to speak. And some of us have this privilege, you know, of sitting here. It's not everybody's cup of tea. We don't have to be leaders there, but some of us have. And to give a good example, a reasonably good example, in India, where I've been going a lot, and I think I've spent 7.5 years of my life in India, so you know, I'm an India wallah there. And some, I can't remember how long ago, maybe 10, 15, maybe 10 years ago, there, teaching in the Thai monastery in Bodh Gaya. Bodh Gaya is the place of the Buddha's enlightenment, of his awakening, of his realization that that human beings are really concerned with suffering and need to be really concerned with the resolution of suffering, which is, you know, obviously what this talk is about with you today there. And I had contact from the person who was in the military, and he was the head of the army camp in Gaya, just like 10, 15 kilometers from the village, from Bodh Gaya. And he had been in the war, in the conflict in Kashmir over this legacy of the British occupation. In which the divisions, as many of you know, between the Palestinians and the Indians, who owns Kashmir, who's responsible for Kashmir, this Pakistan, and thank you for that, it was a slip. Golly, they've got enough problems on already. Between Pakistan and India, over this beautiful region actually of Kashmir in the northern part. And he had, because he was there as an officer, had a great deal of stress, giving orders, of course, and involved with the fighting, etc., etc. And then he was reposted back, but he had immense stress, you know, what these days called post-traumatic or traumatic stress disorder. And then he heard about the retreat. And he arrived, but because of all the risks and dangers, he arrived, there was an army jeep in front of him, an army jeep behind him. He got out in his uniform, and then he asked to find myself. And he said he has to have ongoing protection, and therefore the soldiers in both jeeps in the front had to be there. there, they were not interested in meditation whatsoever. So they came into the hall with their rifles on at the back of the Dharma hall. And I said, you are very welcome, but your rifles are not. If you want to be in the hall, you have to leave your rifles outside of the hall. I think two or three of them agreed, and then one went outside to keep an eye on the rifles, etc., because they could get a few rupees in the market for sale. And so this is the story. The next year, the commander of the camp, there were 15 Indian army generals having a meeting in this army camp, which is, in fact, is referred to, the army camp, by the Buddha in the text. So it's a pretty old army camp, I have to say. I don't know if it's the same place. And he sent one of his staff and said, Christopher, could the generals come and listen to you give your Dharma talk? And I said, oh, yes, they can, etc. So along came all these jeeps, then all the bodyguards, 15 generals there. And I said to the manager that would provide some chairs to for them to sit on, you know, to the side, etc. And bless their hearts, they refused the chairs, you know, the Indian tradition that the guru sits high. And so they sat in a group beside me here, there. And then, of course, the thought arose before walking into the hall, what am I going to talk about? It's not every retreat that you get 15 generals sitting beside you there. And then it came up. It was so obvious. It was so obvious. I'm going to talk about karma. So we've been talking about karma, about your intentions and actions and consequences and suffering. And then I would turn regularly and I would say, and I'm sure you would agree, wouldn't you? Like, just to rub it in a little bit. There. And then and they were very nice, and we had, you know, chai and barfi afterwards. Those, you know, there and there. And I was interested, and I asked the boss of the camp. He was very happy. What was the discussion point after the talk? Because, you know, I didn't make the talk easy. It's not like I'm trying to please them or anything, you know, it was straight down the line, like intentions, actions, and consequences, and suffering for them and for others there. And I asked, and the initial discussion point was, how is it that an Englishman with the background of the British of 200 years of occupation of India is coming to India to speak about karma, which is our tradition? This they could not get their mind around. What to do, what to do. Sometimes people hear say that anyway, whatever. So sometimes it's the finding of the voice. With the love and the kindness that we, as much as we can, not being afraid there. And sometimes, and part of the preparation in our explorations and sharings of the liberation of the voice, some preparation, can I learn as a practice to be mindfully enough of the other to take the heat? That is a challenge. Not so much the voice is speaking, and it's, you know, hopefully calm and careful with the language and the words. And if, especially if one is quoting the other, we have to be extremely precise. If there is any exaggeration, if it's a personal dialogue of what the person said, she or he will have an excuse to react. that's not what I said. Or you're going too far back into the past, or whatever it might be. So when we communicate as mindfully and carefully as possible, as to repeat, can I be calm enough to take, it may happen or not, some heat which comes back to one. Learn to feel that through, feel the sensation, in a way that it doesn't inflame our own response. And the calmness and the clarity, and the Buddha said, it's a pretty strong statement of confidence. He once said, the world, that means in this case other people, may argue and have conflict with me, but I am not in conflict with the other. And it's an important statement, because the general assumption is two people make a conflict, which can be true. But sometimes, if there is enough calm and clarity with the being, physically, emotionally, mentally, verbally, there's enough calm and clarity with the being, we can put hand on heart and really know I'm not in conflict with the other, because there's enough clarity of the being to stay steady. She or he may be in conflict with oneself, but it doesn't have to be both ways there. And if you are relatively calm and settled and you sense that active participation, that voice, you have to be prepared that can make people even more angry. That the other wants to stimulate the anger out and say, there, I told you so. You're just an angry bastard, I knew it all along. Or whatever the rhetoric may be at the time. So it's not that it all gets calm and comfortable for both parties. And once again, just to repeat, the period after the experience, in its best sense for us there, for anybody, can be a deliberate reflection on it. And I've got in mind the most difficult person in your life. I've got in mind the most difficult group, we might say, in your life. And quite often, where there is this difficulty or agitation or anger or whatever, 99 times out of 100 there, that person will not be able to stop thinking about it. Understand? If there's calmness and clarity, there can be a purposeful intention to reflect on the event. I want to understand. What can I learn from this? What was my responses like? Next time I have a difficult conversation, what understanding can I bring from my last one to my next one there? And that will come for us out of our calm and clarity. But for a person who's upset, agitated, fault-finding there, she or he will not be able to stop. They will not be able to walk out of the room or out of wherever it is and not be going on about it. The heat will go, but the mind will replace the heat, and usually self-justification, other blame. And we safeguard and we protect ourselves from all of that burning up inside through finding and making conversations, particularly important ones, really a core feature of our practice. It's a really core feature of our practice. And it's kind of appealing. I'm at 7:30, food time, all right. It's rather appealing here to something other than, this afternoon, three friends came, friends of Tobin have been here often, one of them some of you will know, Lubna, the Palestinian, and to others, Donor and Orit. And we were had a little time together and some sharing, which is was going on. And in the course of the sharing, what amongst some different aspects which emerged out of the communication, one touched upon a little bit with you. If we can have a real dedication of respect to diversity, it will go a long way. In other words, if we can really, like with the creature world and the plant world, there is such diversity there. And if we can begin to sense that, then we start building the networks. And it's just like with the fungi, understand the word, with the trees there. You know, these remarkable trees there. And the fungi itself helps to make the links between the trees and the underground and really gives support, the aspects there. And you and I, we're fungi. And there are these big trees around the nation state and organizations and networks and institutions, etc. And we've got to find ways, we're the fungi, you know, just quietly in the roots of things, just spreading out there and helping to make some links. And the trees are willing to give up, because it's an exchange, apparently 25% of their sugar and their carbohydrates in their tree to the fungi, because the fungi is contributing to the network. This network is far more important than internet. This is the network of life. It's not a substitute network. It's the network of big plants that we live in, and our care and responsibility in our listening to each other, and start really building up some networks with a view to revolution, a view to another way of being, that we give support to each other. And for that, as I mentioned a little bit earlier today, networking, connecting, linking up with, listening to, responding to the person in front, the larger situation. If we keep doing that, keep doing that, keep doing that as a really great priority in our life, it will bring happiness. It will bring greater love and wisdom in life. And who could possibly deny that this life is full of networks? It's not like, oh, it's a truth that the Buddhists dreamt up, or whatever. Look at the network here. Look at the connection of the backside with the cushion, the sky above and the earth below. Look at the different diversities in the room of age and gender and color and size and shape and history and language and so forth. And all the creatures that we spotted during the days. It's not like saying, oh, there's no such thing as interconnectedness. It's completely obvious. It's one of the most obvious truths of existence. And we have to be respectful to this truth of existence and keep trust in it so that we don't become insular and small-minded. It's a great task, it's a great challenge, but it's a noble way of life. Thank you for listening. Let's have our quiet minute together. May all beings know the liberation of the voice. May all beings acknowledge the vast network of diversity. May all beings know love and liberation. The time now is 5:35. In fact, whispered in my ear before you came in. Please, Christopher, give us 3 minutes because nearly all of the staff very kindly came to lend an ear on the talk, and they just wanted to finish getting the food out onto the tables and things like that. So one of the peak experiences of the day will be in around 3 or 4 minutes. Thank you.